Good afternoon. We're going to open a committee on the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness. Welcome, everybody. Appreciate being here. Committee members, we are just a couple folks short. I understand they'll be making their way here. We have a few bills to get through today. You'll notice we have a pending possible work session on a couple of them, and looking forward to getting some work done today. So, again, welcome. And with that, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2633. And Elizabeth, if you could read us the summary, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2633 authorizes the Department of Veterans Affairs to define honorable conditions via rule. It declares an emergency and is effective upon passage. There is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Thank you very much. And I believe we have a couple folks to testify on the committee, and the ODVA is here, but not testifying, but supportive, and I appreciate that. So if we could please have Representative Doherty, if you will please make your way, and I believe with you from Legislative Council, Melissa Sidley. If you please take the dais.
Mr. Chair, can we cross-examine her very closely?
We consider her a hostile.
That's right.
Absolutely.
I do happen to sit on her Committee of Business and Labor, so I'll leave that to her discretion. If you will.
It all depends on how much you like your chair and want to keep in your chair's good favor.
Thank you. If you want to introduce yourselves for the record, and House Bill 2633.
Thank you very much. For the record, I am Representative Margaret Doherty. I represent House District 35, which is Tigard in Southwest Portland. I'm here today to talk about House Bill 2633. It's pretty much a housekeeping bill. It's a bill that defines the term honorable conditions for statutory purposes. Specifically, it has the Department of Veterans Affairs define the term under rule in order to clear up some of the legal ambiguity about the term's meaning. But it also allows the department to clarify the term as they use it when they define their own benefits for veterans. I will leave more of the complicated legal aspects to Melissa Sidlick from the Legislative Council, who helped us develop the bill and can speak to all of the technical questions at hand. But I'd like to give you a little background of how we got here. We received a call this summer from a concerned constituent who was confused about the ambiguous usage of the term honorable conditions in Oregon statute. He was a federal military retiree. We went ahead and forwarded this question to Legislative Council, where Melissa was happy to look into the matter. After some research, LC found that there was indeed some legal ambiguity, so we began to work together with the Department of Veterans Affairs in order to solve this. We wanted to solve the ambiguity of the issue that allowed the department to be able to maintain to continue the use of the terms how they used it, but would also clarify things for people to receive benefits. After several conversations with the Veterans Department, we reached a bill that's in front of you, which simply defines the term in statute to what the Veterans Department defines in its rules. This clears up the legal ambiguity and solves the issue.
Thank you. And Ms. Sidlick.
I am Melissa Sidlick. I am Deputy Legislative Counsel and the drafter of the bill, and I'm here to talk to you about the need for the bill. It is purely a technical statutory fix, and it does not come from the need to address any implementation or administration issues with respect to the department. It is our responsibility in our office to point out to legislators when there are concerns with the laws, the language in the laws of our state, and such is the case here. The term under honorable conditions is susceptible to misinterpretation, possible misconstruction, and the purpose of the bill is to clarify the meaning of the term under honorable conditions for the purposes of definition of veteran. The problem arises out of the fact that there are many different kinds of discharges, and I'm not an expert in them, but the two in particular that are of concern to our office are, of course, the honorable discharge, which one gets when one has a has a good to excellent rating, and then the general discharge under honorable conditions, which one gets with the satisfactory rating. And they are two different kinds of discharges. There may not be too much consequence under state law for the different kinds of discharges, but there is a difference under federal law. In some cases, there might be a difference in a person's entitlement to benefits or participation in certain kinds of veteran commissions or other activities. But they are two different kinds of discharges. The concern that our office had was that the definition of veterans throughout our statutes refers to under honorable conditions, which may be interpreted not just by laypersons or by former service members, but also by courts as being a reference only to the discharge, general discharge under honorable conditions. And I don't think that was the intent of the legislature when they were using the definition of veteran in the various laws throughout the revised statutes. Under federal law, veteran is defined in the United States Code and the Code of Federal Regulations, as well as the Veterans Benefits Manual, as being a service member who, among other things, has been discharged or released under conditions other than dishonorable. There was discussion that we had with the department over this, and it was decided that the option in House Bill 2633 was the preferred option and provided the most flexibility to the department to make sure that those persons who intend to receive benefits and entitlements under state law get them. And this bill, if passed, together with this legislative history that we're developing this session, would assure that the rules developed by the department would encompass veterans who are discharged not just with an honorable discharge, but also those with a general discharge under honorable conditions. And so, again, just to emphasize, this is a statutory technical language fix and does not come from any issues or problems with implementation. And I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you both for the testimony. I appreciate that, because it wouldn't be our intent to try to pass something that would stop somebody or prevent them from accessing benefits, and I know it's not your intent either. Thanks for the comments. Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Doherty, can you give us an example? Because after 35 years, I've never had anybody question or run into this in any of the myriad documents that I've had to have the VA send or verify or whatever. What conditions would this have come up in?
Well, what it was is when it was originally brought to us, the person that was most concerned is that because there were two different definitions, there was a possibility that somebody could not get benefits and would not get benefits.
That's true.
And so when talking to the department to go through and say that, you know, if we have, give the department the flexibility to, and then the question was, honorable or under honorable conditions, that the federal statute and the state statutes were different. The idea was the same. I mean, you know, you've got honorable and you might have a under honorable circumstances, served your time, did a very good job, but because of an injury or something was released. And so we just wanted to make sure that there was absolutely no ambiguity in the law and no question, and that the department would have the flexibility that they have now to make sure that veterans receive the benefits that they deserve. And it does not deal with people who were discharged under unhonorable circumstances, just the definition between those two.
Well, thank you. And, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make sure that my recent application for my state park permit wasn't going to be in jeopardy.
Well, so there is an amendment we're thinking of now.
Thanks, Representative Huffman. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm glad you kind of touched on this, but I wanted to make it very clear. This would be someone that was in the service 178, 180 days or longer. Let's say they ended up being ill or hurt or something like that. They were discharged on a medical discharge under honorable conditions. Is that correct? Am I on the right track on this?
Yes, Chair Matthews, Representative Esquivel, members of the committee. There are I'm not an expert on how one gets the various types of discharges, and that would be for the department. I think there are other ways that one gets the discharge.
Well, we'll bring Tom up because he's over 50 yards from his house, so that means he is an expert.
He is an expert.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Mann. I'm with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. There are actually six types of discharge. Let me run through them very quickly. There's an uncharacterized discharge, meaning you've served less than a six-month period, less than 180 days, and you were administratively discharged. Most of the time that happens when you don't make it through basic.
Correct.
There is your honorable discharge. That is just your basic service. You did fine, you did your time, and you get out. There's your general discharge under honorable conditions. That means you probably had a little bit of a problem. You got a non-judicial punishment, a captain's mast, an Article 15. You did something, but not enough to really get you in trouble, but enough that they probably took a rank away from you, took a little pay away from you, and when you left, you were a little bit of a troublemaker, but not so bad they were going to mess up your benefits. Under federal law, those three discharges get benefits, just you're eligible. Then we get into other than honorable discharge. You did a little bit more than you should have in terms of getting in some trouble. You probably had more than one non-judicial punishment. You could get popped for a hot UA, urine analysis test. You could have a problem stealing, something like that. You can get an other than honorable discharge. Then you go with a dishonorable discharge. You're in big trouble. You stole a car. You punched a senior officer. You did something really bad. And then you have your bad conduct discharge, meaning you were court-martialed. And so for the purposes of VA, federal VA, and state VA, we know for those first three, uncharacterized, honorable, and under honorable conditions, there's no problems getting benefits. Everyone's eligible for those discharges. When you start getting into the wading into the other than honorables and the dishonorables and the bad conduct, federal VA has a waiver system for VA purposes. This is important. You can have a soldier come back from Afghanistan, have post-traumatic stress, get ticked off at somebody like a senior officer and punch him in the mouth, and all of a sudden get an other than honorable discharge. We can go back to the VA and say, well, that was due to his service-connected post-traumatic stress, and they will give him benefits based upon this mitigating circumstances. We can also do discharge upgrades based on those same mitigating circumstances. So the whole discharge issue is a little bit complicated. It's not as cut and dry as it might seem. And we're happy as an agency to put that in rule so everyone knows clearly what their discharge means. Because I know that when we all got out of the service, we were just happy to get out of the service. And we got that discharge paper. And I can tell you there's so many people that when they finally look at it 10 years later, it's missing awards, it's got the wrong Social Security number on it, you know, some E4 did the wrong typed with their elbows, and so these things happen. So we want to make sure in our rules it's clear cut, this is what these things mean, so everyone's clear about what their benefits are.
Mm-hmm. And we were concerned to make sure that the Department of Veterans Affairs had the flexibility to use their ruling or their rules to go through and put the definitions together.
Great. Any further questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, thank you all, and
thank you
Tom, for stepping forward, and have a great day. All right, close the public hearing on House Bill 2633. And committee members, unless there's an objection, I'd like to consider opening the work session for House Bill 2633. So at this point, I'll open a work session for House Bill 2633.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I move that we move House Bill 2633 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves House Bill 2633 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Aye.
Chair Matthews?
Aye. And the motion passes. So we'll need to assign a carrier, and it's my understanding that Representative Doherty would like to carry this to the floor, and if you don't mind, we'll just ask her to do so. So thank you so much to everybody involved. And Ms. Seidlick, thanks for all your work in LC. We appreciate the drafts, all 2,000 to 3,000 of them. Thanks again, Tom. Appreciate your support. All right, so with that, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2182.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 2182 designates September 27th as annual First Responder Day. It has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. And I see that Representative Boone has made her way to the dais. So with that, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Committee. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32. And I am, I apologize. Next one. I was going to invite Dr. McConnell up with me, but she's really on the next bill. This bill came to me by way of Timothy Gregg, who's a EMT, I think, in somewhere in Colorado. I can't remember. And all my emails got erased from last time, so I'm winging it here for the background. But basically what it is he is mounting a countrywide effort to name September 27th as First Responder Appreciation Day. And this is for all first responders, police, fire, you name it, emergency workers. And his reasoning is instead of having a separate day for all the different permutations of the sector, that the people who are first on scene and put themselves out day and night at any hour deserve a special day. And so he asked me if I'd be interested in doing this for Oregon. And it was, I think it was last May or June. It was a long time ago what I heard from him. So I told him I would do that, and here we are. And so I would refer you to read the bill. It's a one-page bill. And I hope that you can support this bill and would consider even working it today. Thank you. And I'd be happy to answer questions.
And before you leave, yes, let's check. Committee members, do you have any questions of Representative Boone?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Boone, have you looked on a calendar to find out what other day or what other events that day has been set aside for? Will it be sharing it with National Peanut Butter and Jelly Day or anything? Any awareness to what else might be shared on that day?
Well, thank you for that question. I knew somebody would ask it. And the answer is the date came with the request. And again, in my records, which have escaped me now somewhere in cyberspace, and my memory is not what it used to be, but it was a special date to the state of Colorado for some event that happened there, and that's why they started this effort. Because what ended up happening is different states wanted different dates for whatever reason. So I chose actually our chair's birthday, but he wouldn't let me take that. So, just kidding. Anyway, it has special meaning to this man in Colorado, and since he's heading up the effort, I think that's why it was chosen. But National Peanut Butter and Jelly Day is safe. Don't worry, it's not the same day. That's on your birthday.
Thanks for clarifying that for us. Are you comfortable with that answer?
That's all good.
Wonderful. Well, if you want to join us back up here, we'll call some folks up. And we have several folks. In fact, one that needs to leave as soon as possible. We'll get to him up first. So if we could have on the first panel, Kevin Campbell, if you will, from the Oregon Chiefs, Daryl Fuller with the Sheriff's Association, and Nicole Palmateer, Oregon Fire Chiefs Association. So we'll put police and fire here.
I'll be tough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I wanted to mention that right up front, I think Daryl's in the committee hearing room next door, and so we'll probably have to alert him that the bill is already up. But
that would be fine.
I want to thank the chair and the members of the committee for letting me to testify early. My name is Kevin Campbell. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, and I'm here today obviously to speak in favor of House Bill 2182. It's been my privilege to represent the Chiefs now for going on 20 years, and they're a great group to represent. I want to thank Representative Boone for bringing this bill forward, and the chair and the members of the committee for hearing it today. The over 300 members of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, they want me to communicate their appreciation for your efforts to recognize the work of police officers and all first responders that regularly put their lives on the line or are responding to the crisis of our citizens on a regular basis. I want to mention in particular the work of police officers because our chiefs work with officers on a daily basis and oversee their work. The work of the police officer is dangerous, it's increasingly complex, and probably not as noticed, it can be extremely traumatizing as well. In today's world, our police officers have to be aware of an increasing breadth of law, everything from constitutional law to state laws to local ordinances that are constantly constantly changing, and that occurs even in case law. And they have to be able to apply these new laws consistently, accurately, fairly, and impartially, often with only split seconds, to render a decision that may make the difference between life and death. And officers that fail to meet our expectations face litigation and pretty intense media scrutiny. We expect our officers to be able to safeguard DNA evidence, to use communication and data technologies, clean up methamphetamine labs, and to intervene in domestic disturbances and child abuse situations where we require them to handcuff abusers and to safeguard victims in some of the most emotional and personal situations. The increasing complexity and diversity of our communities impose an enormous challenge to officers as they strive to understand, communicate with, and serve the public. We ask them to perform their duties in communities with an increasing number of citizens suffering from mental illness and substance abuse, where resources to address crises are lacking and the responsibility to respond falls to our officers often. The very nature of crime itself has evolved in ways never before imagined due to changes in technology, a more mobile society, and rapidly changing world events. Routine public safety risks our officers deal with now may even include issues related to international terrorism, even in Oregon. This measure may seem ceremonial in some regards, but I've got to tell you, when you work with law enforcement leaders and officers, this kind of bill and recognition is extremely significant to them. As I conclude, I want to take a moment to just remember a couple painful situations in our recent past. The reason I bring them up is, representing the police chiefs, you often think of somebody that's sitting behind a desk, who's not in action, not doing patrol work. And I want to mention just a couple instances that will let you know that, in fact, some of those chiefs are out and at the same kinds of risks that they place their officers in. You'll probably remember December 12, 2008. It was the day that a bomb blew up in a Woodburn bank and took the life of Senior Trooper William Hakeem and Captain Tennant from the Woodburn Police Department, Chief Scott Russell, who was there with Captain Tennant to actually check on his officers that day who had responded to the call, were both there. He was also involved in the explosion, lost his leg, and almost lost his life. He was there doing the right thing, and he has had a painful recovery, but is still the chief in Woodburn and is leading with distinction there. In Oregon, because we have a number of small police departments, the chiefs are often out doing the patrol work as well. And so just 2 years ago, on January 5th, 2011, Rainier Police Chief Ralph Painter responded to a call, a burglary in process, was beaten and shot to death. The first responder who responded to that event was the police chief from neighboring Klatskanai. Small communities, chiefs are right there along with their officers patrolling the street. I really want to thank you for taking time with this bill. It is important to the public safety leaders and officers throughout the state, and I want to thank you on their behalf. And I especially want to thank you for giving me time to come up early. That's very thoughtful, and I appreciate it. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
And we have your written testimony, and that's submitted to the record, too. As you know, the OLIS system is up and working, and we're excited to have it. So thanks very much for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
And if you can just stay for a few minutes, we'll go to Nicole, and then we'll have you for questions. Thank you.
Chair Matthews, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nicole Palmateer. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association. As Kevin stated, we would like to offer our support of House Bill 2182, declaring First Responder Appreciation Day. We'd like to thank Representative Boone for her leadership in putting this forward. The Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, providing leadership and service to support fire chiefs, administrative offices throughout the state, and to fire and emergency medical services as a whole, understand the critical importance of first responders on every everyday basis, and certainly we know that Chair Matthews has some personal experience in that particular neck of the woods. They are a key and critical part of our emergency response system. Whether volunteers or employees, police, fire, EMS, or search and rescue, they stand ready to come to all of our aid at a moment's notice. And I know that when anybody is calling 911, we don't ever second guess whether there's somebody that's going to be there. We know they will be. They're a critical part of the fabric of our community, and they deserve our appreciation. And Representative Huffman, we actually just did a little check, at least from the fire service side, and there isn't any other significant days of recognition on September 27th that we know of. The day is clear, at least from the fire service side. So I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you again, Representative Boone, for bringing this forward, and we stand in great support of this bill.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Fuller, I apologize. I called you and you were next door, but we'll give you an opportunity as well.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller on behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. Representative Matthews, I appreciate you letting me squeeze in here. I'm in a couple of different committees at the same time. It's always good to be busy. This chamber and the legislature in general and the people of Oregon are very gracious in recognizing the work of first responders, especially when something bad happens. When somebody dies in the line of duty, people have died in a fire, we hold public memorials, we have memorials in the legislature, and we provide ceremonies and walls for their names, and first responders appreciate that recognition. But the notion of providing an opportunity to recognize our first responders while they're in their day-to-day tasks and just doing what they do day in and day out to protect the public, we believe is certainly appropriate, and we appreciate the time and effort that's gone into creating the legislation, and we're happy to support it.
Thank you. Members of the committee, any questions for the panel? Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't see, I've only got a summary of the bill, so I didn't really see. Do you anticipate the use of drones at any point?
Chair Matthews and members of the committee and Representative Huffman, that was the one conflict on this day, as it is also a drone appreciation.
And I would point out, Representative Matthews may remember that my brother was a firefighter who is now a police officer, as he was a police officer and is now a firefighter, that we might think of maybe a special day for those people that like to do the double duty.
Well, and as those of us that make that transition from JV to varsity know.
You're speaking of my brother, right?
No.
As I joke, I have a tremendous amount of respect for our law enforcement and our firefighters throughout the state and throughout the nation, and all first responders, and that's the entire system. Could not do it alone, any one entity, and that's from the 911 call takers to everybody out there providing EMS and that first response. So appreciate being here today, and thank you for your testimonies. Anybody else have any other questions?
Thank you.
Oh, Representative Boone.
Not a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to call out Guy in the back, a retired state trooper who keeps us safe here in the Capitol. And now we have another one of our retired folks, and we like to honor them every day anyway, but this will be a special day. And I really appreciate you coming forward. Some people might think it was a little bill, but I think it's a big deal. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
I'll make sure that Mr. Gregg gets a copy of when we finish this.
Well, thank you so much. And folks, if you just stand by, just I'm going to close the public hearing just briefly, and if you'll just give me a bit of liberty here. If I could please have the director of the ODVA, Jim Willis, please just come forward and take a seat at the dais for just a moment, if you will.
Do we get to gruel him?
Uh-oh.
Grill him? Barbecue him? Bake him?
Trying to attract him to the chair, not to run into the next room. Director Willis, yes. Welcome to the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness. It's great to see you, and we saw you walk in, and we would be remiss if we didn't bring you here forward in front of this committee, as we understand you'll be retiring soon.
Yes, sir.
And several of us have been with you for at least 4 years and many longer than that.
That's
right. I think it's important that we just say thank you for your service to Oregon's veterans and all you've done for your country, this great nation, this great state, and all the veterans, ourselves included. So thanks for all your work. And members, if you'd like to say anything to Mr. Willis, anything, feel free, and then we'll give him an opportunity to let us know what his plans are.
I would, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I want you to know that respect to me is earned. It's never given. And you being a combat veteran of the same era that I was in, and your understanding of what a veteran goes through when they come out of a theater is to me very remarkable. I'm seeing that your replacement has done 4 tours, I think it was, in Iraq and Afghanistan, I believe.
Three? In Iraq.
So bless his heart, because he knows what we know, and I appreciate you very much, and you always have my respect, but more importantly,
you always have the veteran first and foremost in your heart and your mind, and I thank you for that.
Well, thank you, Representative Esquivel, and thank you, Chair Matthews, for allowing me to come up and talk to the committee. And yes, I've worked with a number of these. In fact, I've worked with all these committee members for some longer than others, and we won't talk about how long because that's not important. We don't want to go that far back, but let me just simply say that on behalf of the men and women of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, that our ability to be effective at serving our veterans and their families and the widows and orphans is because this body has listened to us in terms of what the needs of the agency was in serving them and has met the need. And I'm certainly hoping that for the 2013-15 biennium that our very adequate budget is up and passed, and we'll be able to continue that level of service. And I want to express to you every confidence in Cameron Smith as the director nominee until, of course, he receives Senate confirmation. That I've worked with him for a number of years now under two governors, and he's going to be fine. He's going to do a great, great job. And I think it's what Representative Esquivel knows this, it's sort of the passing of the torch. Our generation, the Vietnam generation, is passing this to the veterans of the war on global terrorism, Operation Iraqi Freedom, Operation Enduring Freedom, and Representative Esquivel said it right, a combat veteran's a combat veteran, and he knows what that's like, and he'll relate to World War II veterans all the way to the current, and to those who served in peacetime, as an example, during the Cold War. So the department will go on, and I will pass this one other bit of wisdom on if it's worth anything to you. When you leave a role, no matter how long you've been in it, and I'm leaving public service after 48 years of service, there's a test called the bucket test. It's very simple. You take a bucket, you fill it with water, you put your finger in the water, you pull your finger out, and the hole that's left is the hole you're going to leave when you go. So my point is there's always some great person ready to step up, work with a great team of people, and with the governing body to make sure that those services stay good for all of our people. And that's been this committee's role ever since I've worked with them. And I really appreciate it, and thank you for giving me this moment, Representative Chair Matthews. And I'll even disregard the statement about going from junior varsity to varsity. I don't know how many times I guarded fire hoses as a police officer. People wouldn't run over them so the firefighters could continue to do their work before they went back and went to sleep while I stayed on patrol.
Oh, wow.
Just so.
Just understand this thing still works. Well, I'll tell you, Director, thank you. And for your analysis of the bucket test, would it make a difference if you used Jell-O? Just anything? I just wonder. But I'll tell you. I do believe that that Cameron's going to do well, but I'll tell you, you have served us all well.
And, thank you, sir.
It's out of respect from us, and I know that we have some folks that want to say a few more thanks to you, but I appreciate you taking the time. And to those in the audience, I just found it fitting that we're here to talk about a bill that was on recognizing our first responders, saying thank you and having a day. But when you walked in the door, I just thought that we needed the opportunity to do this, if you would, please. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim, publicly, sure. I just want to say I love you. We've worked on many projects together.
Yes, we have.
Personal and legislative, for the Dalles, for many different things. Yeah. So you and your entire staff have just been great. I mean, you have created a culture there of helping veterans and helping legislators to help veterans, and it has not gone unnoticed and unappreciated. I believe your room is waiting for you at the Veterans Home in the Dalles, the one that you picked out many years ago. Mm-hmm. And the
boy,
the culture that you created there also, some people on the committee may know. I know Representative Witt went down there with me one time and toured. But the culture that you created there, even though WestCare, you know, covers the day-to-day operations, your presence has been felt to the point where that is a nationally award-winning home for our veterans, and that comes from you. And as we add the Lebanon home and then the Roseburg home and Kay Falls and on, I have a lot of faith and trust in Cameron, and I hope that's one of the torches, that passion that you pass on to him, because it really has been effective for the first home in the Dalles, and it's much appreciated.
Thank you very much, Representative Huffman. Appreciate that.
Representative Boone?
Mr. Chair, and Jim, thank you. I've worked with you. I'm the oldest woman in the room. I have that distinction. So you have to listen to this. You have always been, and your staff have always been responsive. The most I've ever had to do is follow up with an email saying thank you, because from the first initial help me with this constituent issue, you take it and run with it. It's over with it faster than I can even check my email. And everything always seems to work out. I hear kudos from the people. They help, and I just think you've done a fabulous job, and I think you guys don't know diddly squat about, you're talking about him in a room somewhere. He's retiring, then we're going to see him more than ever. Yeah, he's a busy guy. I can't see him slowing down much, and you're always welcome in my district. If you do take a few days off, we'll make sure the weather's perfect for you, but thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you very much, Representative Boone. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
Jim's public service is vastly more than just 48 years. He's not only been a combat veteran, but he's somebody who was wounded as a police officer multiple times. There's probably not many people that know in the past several years, he spent night after night after night, week in and week out, going to every veterans meeting across this state from one end to the other. I don't think there's been anybody who's been to more veterans meetings in this state, in the history of this state, than has Jim Willis. And it would be my sincere hope that now that he's retiring, that his family be able to share some of that time with him, because they've all earned it. And you're a great Oregonian, Jim.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Witt. I will assure you of one thing. There is a woman very important to me that I stay with and have for many years now, who is known as She Who Must Be Obeyed.
Yes.
That must be completed. I'm not sure I can live as long as that list is, but I've done my best. And as far as moving into my room in the Veterans Home in the Dalles, I determined it was too far away, and because I lived in Albany, we're building one in Lebanon. So that's where my room will be.
And yes, we will.
But I will be around, and I will be continuing to be active in the Vietnam Veterans of America and the Veterans of Foreign Wars and the American Legion at the ground level, which is where I came from. So it's kind of nice to go back there, you know. So, again, Chair Matthews, thank you very much for taking a moment or two. And I appreciate very much everything all of you have done for our veterans.
Well, thanks for your dedicated service, sir. Well done. Job well done. Enjoy your retirement, and God bless you. Best wishes. Thank you, sir.
Remember, I'll have a fixed income, so.
There we go.
This is not the committee hearing that will hear the PERS bills, but I appreciate that, sir, very much.
Thank you. Be gentle on us retirees.
We'll discuss that one.
No. Thank you. Thank you very much. And committee members, thank you for your indulgence. I think that was worthwhile for all of us, and a great man there. And thank you. So we will again open a public hearing on House Bill 2182. And if I could please have Larry Hatch from the Oregon APCO and Nina, Gary McLean from the Oregon EMS Association, and Toby Wilson with Oregon EMS.
Chair Matthews and committee members, Larry Hatch representing Oregon APCO, NENA, your 911 managers, call takers, and dispatchers from around the state. I would have gladly had you tell me to go home and come back tomorrow recognizing Jim like that. I've known him since we were both police officers together, and he's a man of ethics, and I think that's high praise for anyone. Anyway, we too wanted to thank Representative Boone for bringing this bill forward. I think it's a small but important step that can be taken to recognize public safety people that are out there, like you've heard already, 24/7 taking care of our communities, whether they're paid people, volunteers, they're all the same when it comes to the folks that show up at your house. So we would urge your support of the bill and hope that you pass it.
Thank you, sir, and thanks for your testimony. Thanks for your service as well. A lot of folks don't realize, but long before September 11th was the day of terrorist attacks, it was the day to recognize our dispatchers. So I appreciate the wonderful work you do. Thanks for your past service as police officer. Much respect, and keep up the great work. Thank you, sir. Mr. McLean.
Chair Matthews, members of the committee. I wasn't aware that we are actually going to be giving verbal testimony, but thank you. I guess I checked that box. I'm president of the Oregon EMS Association. With me is Toby Wilson, our vice president. Oregon has approximately 10,000 emergency medical service workers. Those range from emergency medical responders or first responders, what we just call them, up to paramedics. So we have quite a few. And so we just wanted to say thank you very much for Representative Boone for bringing this piece of legislation forward. First responders, those first on scene, as we hear, it's a system. We need everybody to be involved. And this piece of legislation just is appreciated for all of us. And just like to say thank you very much.
Great. Sir, anything to add? Any questions for the panel? Committee members? Yes, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just say that, getting back to that date, that gives everybody plenty of time to plan in their cities and counties and in their districts celebrations and maybe a parade or two. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you again for coming. And if there's no questions of the committee, I think we're done with the panel. Thank you very much, and I appreciate it. Thank you. I don't see anybody else signed up to testify. Is there anybody else here that wanted to testify on House Bill 2182? And with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2182. And if there's no objection, I'll open a work session on House Bill 2182. And Representative Fagan.
Chair Matthews, I move House Bill 2182 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Representative Fagan moves House Bill 2182 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Excused.
Chair Matthews?
Aye. And the motion passes. So with that in mind, we'll assign a carrier, and I would imagine that Representative Boone wants to carry this bill to the floor.
Thank you.
Thank you. And so we'll look forward to you carrying that bill to the floor. And please, committee members, remind me when Representative Parrish comes in, she did have to step out for another committee. Make sure we can at least, if we're still in committee, we'll open and allow her to vote on that subject. Thank you. And moving on, we will now open a public hearing on House Bill 2183.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2183 removes the requirement that employers of 250 or more full-time employees in Oregon conduct annual earthquake drills in the month of April. It permits annual earthquake drills to be held at any time. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. I'll just introduce it.
250 employees. Wonderful. And thank you, Ms. Edwards. And I see we have a panel coming forward. And Representative Boone, do you have the folks that you would like to be seated with you at the dais?
Yes.
Are you? For General Caldwell and Dr. McConnell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32. And today I'm bringing to you, at the request of Oregon Emergency Management, this little housekeeping bill and bill to add flexibility to jurisdictions, et cetera, to hold, instead of holding an earthquake drill in a particular time frame, to open it up and have it be once a year. And I have with me Dr. Vicki McConnell, who's director of DOGAMI, and Brigadier General Mike Caldwell from the Oregon Guard. And they probably have something to say about this. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. McConnell.
Thank you, Chair Matthews and the committee members. For the record, my name is Vicki McConnell, and I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. And as part of our responsibility, we have a mandate to identify, characterize, and mitigate for geologic hazards, and earthquakes and seismic hazards fits in that category. And as part of our mandate, we do a lot of outreach and education on how to prepare for, how to respond to, how to make yourself safe from those hazards. And we work very closely with the Office of Emergency Management on that as well. So that's why I'm here before you today, just to talk a little bit about this earthquake drill requirement. And as you folks know, you're very familiar with emergency response and those issues. Having drills to practice how you respond to something in a safe manner is very important. Fire drills, earthquake drills, etc. So this bill came forward several years ago with the idea that we should have, because we have a earthquake hazard in the state, and we have a way to respond that, to at least help folks to at least take one time a year to have your folks, whether you're a state agency or an employer, to do an earthquake drill. And initially, it came, the idea was to have it in April, because April is the National Earthquake and Tsunami Awareness Month. So there's a lot of outreach that goes on at that time. So that is why April got built into this bill initially. Since then, we've had a lot of activities happen, everything from Japan, earthquakes in Japan on March the 11th. We also have a lot of outreach that occurs in October, and I'll have the general will talk about this in the Great Shakeout. So this bill simply eliminates a restriction that says you can only do this in 1 month if you want to say that you're answering the mandate, and opens it up so that there's way more flexibility. And we're all very in favor of flexibility and the drills. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. And why don't we just save the questions until the panel concludes. And General Caldwell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good to see everybody back and some new faces, but I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. Office of Emergency Management is now, we have hired a director on my left. I'd like to introduce Lieutenant Colonel retired Marty Plotner, who's now the Director of Office of Emergency Management in our agency. So my 2.5 years as a temporary fill-in is over. Not that I didn't enjoy that. And also in the back of the room, I have Captain Tony Garcia, who's going to be helping me this session. Tony's back here, and the room's full, but you can spot him, I'm sure. Raise your hand, Tony, so they can catch you. I think, as the good doctor has indicated, there are several opportunities now that we have in the state of Oregon. As you know, we are very limitedly resourced in the Office of Emergency Management. We have one person who actually does specifically deals with earthquakes. And we have taken the bent for the last several years that since we don't have a lot of personnel to get out to the different counties and the different regions to do training, we work very efficiently, but we try to do it by virtue of using the local emergency managers. I think we've got a really good program on the coast. We're trying to expand it further inland right now, but we've done a really good job with the help of DOGAMI and the local emergency managers at the county level. We've really done a whale of a job, I think, and if you go down the coast and you look anywhere you go anymore, you'll see the signed tsunami trails to get away and routes and this sort of thing. And that's all local effort, with a little bit of guidance from us and what little help we can put out there. As this came up, and I agree wholeheartedly with DOGAMI and the good doctor, there are several different opportunities. We did a quick Google search to see how other states do it, and there's February, there's April, there's March, October, September, so it's kind of all over the map. So I think this is not a bad way to approach it, because we are going to focus on those two specific months, April and October. That's kind of what we're doing. So we'll have some media out there during that period of time, and I suspect a lot of people will continue to do that. But, however, if that isn't available, we just think it gives people the option to do what works for them best. Recently read an article down at Manzanita, I think it was, and they have tsunami trail walks almost every month. They on a Saturday, Saturday market, different affairs, they'll invite people down, the city management and the county will then walk a different trail away and to inform their citizens of where these trails are, where these paths are, where these routes are in case of a tsunami. So, I mean, there's some really good stuff going on down on the Oregon coast right now. And that's pretty much the local level bootstrap, and we provide what we can provide to assist them, both agencies. We work hand in glove on that. So that's all I have to say, unless you have any questions.
Director Plotner, did you want to add any words, or were you?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's very difficult to follow General Caldwell on any testimony, but our position basically, at least from OEN's standpoint, is I concur with the General and Degami. We originally had...
Good, by the way.
I know, sir. Thanks. originally, it was designated April to basically align itself for a national proposed campaign that really never surfaced, and locally now in moving it to March for a lot of the celebrations, or allowing the locals to do it on their own, allows any local jurisdiction to affix it to an event that's local or affix it to an effort from another jurisdiction. So we're in support of that as well. Thank you.
Great. Amazing concept. If we give some freedom of flexibility, we might get better compliance. That's great. Well, good for you. How about members of the committee? Do we have any questions from the committee? I don't see any questions of the panel. Thank you so much for your testimony today. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate having this kind of a bill for the first session.
It gets everybody kind of warmed up. We kind of felt like we...
Kind of gets the joints moving again.
Exactly. Yeah, stretch out. You don't want to pull a hammy jumping on this bandwagon.
That's right.
We're going to run. All right. Excellent. Well, thank you very much. And thank you, Representative Boone, for bringing yet another bill.
Is this so, Boone Day?
Yeah.
Boone Day today?
And... anybody else in the audience that was here to testify on House Bill 2183? Seeing nobody, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2183. And committee members, are you comfortable moving this bill today? There didn't seem to be any opposition. It seems like it makes sense, common sense to me. Thank you very much. We will open a work session on House Bill 2183. And anybody want to? Sure, we'll go to you. Thank you.
Chair Matthews, I move House Bill 2183 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Fagan moves House Bill 2183 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Hoffman?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Aye.
Chair Matthews?
Aye. And the motion passes. You're going to need a pack meal or something to get
I'm
down
going
to the floor,
to.
Representative Boone, sure. But I imagine you want to carry this one as well.
I would love to. Thank you.
Good for you. Great. So, yes.
I move that we suspend rules and allow Representative Parrish to vote on House Bill 2182, and I believe it will not affect the outcome of it.
Wonderful. Representative Esquivel moves that the rules be suspended to allow Representative Parrish to vote on House Bill 2182. Any opposition? Seeing none? Does the clerk have to ask? Does Mike need to ask, or can I simply say, Representative Parrish, how would you like to vote on House Bill 2182?
First, I'd like to apologize. I had my cardinal rule in this building is kids, then constituents, so any kids from any districts, and we had a Salem preschool group here that I was able to go to it with. So sorry to miss the vote for both the first time. But yes, I vote aye.
Representative Parrish votes aye, and thank you. And we had you excused for that, knowing that you had business and you had communicated that earlier. And I should note, too, that the governor had a luncheon today for freshmen and incoming legislators. And so I know that Representative Fagan was called to lunch with the governor. And when it comes down to a lunch run a little late with the governor versus being here for Representative Matthews in committee. I get it. So, not a problem. But thank you so much. Committee members, is anything else for the good of the order? Yes, Representative Boone.
Well, I'd just like to thank everybody on the committee for passing my bills today. I appreciate that. And thanks to people who came and testified for them. This is great. Like somebody said, a great way to start. It was General Caldwell, a great way to start the session.
I would only caution you to not get used to it. So, I joke, of course. Thanks for your good work. Anybody else on the committee? Anything else for the good of the order? Mm-hmm. Seeing nothing, thank you all for your work, and we will close the House Committee on Emergency Preparedness. Thank you.
Thank you.